Hey, Drew.
Hey, John.
This is going to be a big one, isn't it?
Hold on to your butts.
I'm Drew.
And I'm John.
And you're listening to The Hourchive,
our ever-growing library of everything, 1 hour at a time.
You're right, that's an excellent part.
That's great.
Oh man.
Man, I cannot, like, I hear that and I am in a helicopter.
Yeah, me too.
It's great. That's the best thing that ever happened to a helicopter. That movie.
Well, yeah.
I mean, maybe Dawn of the Dead. Dawn of the Dead rivals it, but that's that's Jurassic Park is probably the second greatest helicopter use in.
I think helicopter sales went way up after that movie came out.
As did island sales.
Yeah.
And sales of amber.
And dino DNA sales. Yeah.
Oh my God. We're going to spend 15 minutes on Mr. DNA.
Mr. DNA. we're kind of saying that this is a retrospectical film.
This is a big episode. It's covering a lot of ground. It's a retrospectacular.
Yeah.
Which typically has been a 30-year celebration thing.
Right.
But it just so happens that this is the 20-year anniversary of something special, particularly to Drew. And so we're allowing him to substitute this as his retrospectacular pick for this period. But it's also summer.
I'm just giving you a music bed.
Dotson, we got Dotson here.
Oh, wow, yeah. See, nobody cares. We're also saying this is the beginning of the summer series.
Yeah.
Right.
For 2013.
We're kicking off summer.
Because it's now summer. We can officially do that.
Yeah. And we're going to have another series of summer-themed episodes. I think everyone enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. You said it. Jurassic Park was a moment, a defining moment for me.
Would you say that this is the most significant movie in your movie watching life history?
Yeah, I think I would.
There you go.
There you go.
See?
Episode
I called it.
Over.
I called it.
In the episode. What's left to say? Yeah, it is. Because I've done a lot of thinking about this in the recent past. I think it's responsible for my love of movies and for my fascination with the making of movies. It's the reason that I wanted to be a paleontologist at one point.
No.
It's also the reason that I wanted to make movies at one point. I followed up on neither of those dreams.
Yet.
But I did research them. Yeah, yet. It's probably the first novel that I read, you know, like actual novel.
Like an adult novel?
I'm trying to think if anything would have predated that, but I don't think.
Mm.
I think up to that point I had read, you know, mostly young adult literature. Mm-hmm. it was also the first time that I was kind of blown away by how different a book could be from a movie.
And yet still just as good
exactly.
In its own way.
Like, I was not at all disappointed. Like after reading the book, I didn't feel like I missed out on anything, you know, with the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I also felt that both versions were great and that they were both worthy of praise.
I remember hearing, I knew of the book going into the movie, but I hadn't read it. And I remembered hearing two things after seeing the movie. One was that, well, the movie is amazing. And then you read the book and you're like, man, that movie was terrible.
What?
And then the other thing I heard was that Spielberg, what he did with the movie was take an R-rated book and turn it into a PG-13 movie.
I think that's fair.
I think the latter is definitely true.
But he also does some things that make it better, a more interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, I think primarily what I think of is the kids.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, Lex and Tim are different than they are in the movie. Tim is older in the movie. Or in the book, I mean.
Yeah.
Tim's older. Lex is pretty young.
And Tim pretty much does everything. Yeah.
Lex is pretty helpless.
Yeah.
And I think it was a great decision to change the ages of those characters and also make Lex sort of the smart one, but the computer kid, even though her computer hacking skills are absurd. But, you know,
everyone's computer hacking skills were absurd in 1993.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Movie hacking. You know, a few things that I remember from the book, reading the book and being like, oh, wow, this is great, was there was this river chase, right?
Yeah.
Alan Grant.
It's Grant and the kids.
In a raft.
Yeah.
Right.
And there was like, as yet undeveloped part of the island, right? It was like going to be a future attraction.
I think so, yeah.
And it was going to be like a river cruise.
I think they go off a waterfall.
Yes. I think you're right. I remember, because they land in the thing, and doesn't the kid puke again? That was the other thing I really remember from the book was there was so much puke in it. Everybody's puking all the time.
The lawyer, Donald Gennaro, I can't remember if he lives through the book. I know he survives a lot longer. A lot longer than he did in the movie.
I think he does. I think he survives, but the physicist, chaos theory guy.
Malcolm.
He dies in the book.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And then Doctor. Dr. Harding has a much bigger role in the book.
Yes.
And
as does Mr. Chu?
Oh,
I can't remember what his name Chu. Was.
Who?
H-U, maybe. Obviously, he had a very large role in the book.
And, spoiler alert, from here on out, even though we've already spoiled a bunch,
right?
We're going to spoil the book and the movie. In the book, Hammond dies.
Yes, spectacularly.
Yeah,
I will say that was a pretty, we'll probably talk about sequels later. But they did eventually work that scenario into the movies.
Consognathy.
Yes, little
little guys,
diminutive. That was a great death scene in the book.
Does Muldoon survive the book? I think he might.
Maybe. Really should reread that book.
Yeah, it's been... I haven't read it since I was a kid.
Yeah, but you're right. It was a killer novel, and it was like... I remember reading it after seeing the movie and thinking, like, man, it would have been great.
Sure.
It would have been great if they had that river scene.
I agree.
That was really the only thing. Well, and Hammond's death.
In one of the drafts, and I think they may have even storyboarded that scene out at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably just too hard.
But we'll get to this later on too. It does exist in some form.
Yes, it does, my friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, it does. Came came out in 1993.
June 11th, 1993.
So we're almost 20 years later, right?
Yeah.
Almost exactly.
We were actually probably right at about the anniversary of the time I saw it for the second time. Because it was a couple weeks after the release.
I remember seeing it. I mean, I remember going to the theater and being... I can remember being pretty excited about it from trailers and stuff. And the movie starts, and the opening scene is the scene where they're trying to get the Velociraptor transferred from that steel sort of cage into the raptor pen. And that very first scene from the beginning, from the very beginning of it, scared the life out of me. Like, the guy is all standing there, you know, trepidatious, worried about what's coming through the brush. You know, they play it as though a dinosaur is going to come through the brush.
Yes, yeah.
And then this thing, this makes a monstrous noise, and you're like, what is that? And it turns out to be the forklift carrying.
It was very similar to that scene in E.T., where he's hiding in the brush behind Elliot's house.
Yeah. And then, you know, okay, relief. It's just this thing, right? But then when they try to transfer it over, they bungle it, and the raptor, you know, messes everything up, and there's this horrible, you know, attack.
Basically, right from that scene, the entire theme of the movie is outlined. Don't mess with nature.
Right, right, exactly.
Even if you can extract amber or DNA from amber, don't.
You can't contain these creatures.
Life finds a way.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that might come up.
Yeah.
In the movie.
No.
No.
Maybe.
It was in the book. They cut it out.
But I was so scared after that scene, and I wanted to leave. Like, I was...
Wow, really?
Yeah, I was like, is this going to be the movie? Like, I'm scared.
So you thought it was going to be, like, intense horror movie style.
And then it lightens up, you know?
It's a point to that, though. You mentioned, like, the trailers and everything. So you had a sense going into this movie that there were going to be dinosaurs, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was genius that poster art that was everywhere that summer, you know, of just the bones of the Tyrannosaurus. Like, they did a great job of just telling you there are dinosaurs in this movie without telling you anything else about the movie.
Exactly. And I can't remember. I wish I could remember the trailers that came out before the movie was released and whether or not they showed the dinosaurs.
I think, if I remember correctly, there's only one complete shot of a dinosaur in that. And it's the shot of the T-Rex chasing the Jeep when that limb, the tree limb, comes down.
Yeah.
That's the only shot that I remember being in the trailer. Everything else, it was just like, you know, the shaking cage or the maybe you saw that part where the foot presses down in the mud.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, like the obscured... ceiling shot through the car.
And I think that later trailers showed the Gallimimus herd.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. That opening scene scares the life out of me. And then the next scene, I kind of struggled with the next scene because I was so freaked out. I didn't follow a lot of the next scene, you know, which is where they explain where the amber is coming from.
Right.
And stuff like that.
Introduce Nedry.
No, not yet. So the next scene is Gennaro.
Oh, when he walks in on the... Yeah, yeah.
And the miner guy. The guy's mining amber, right? Which is an awesome, like, Gennaro's, like, standing on this raft that's being pulled. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's... Again, it's outlining his character right from the start. Like, this guy's out of place.
Yeah, he does not belong in this world.
He shouldn't be taking on... like adventures, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's unbalanced. He's in danger, and he is. He also looks down on others.
Yeah,
very clear.
Yeah,
he feels that he's superior.
Yes.
Even
though he doesn't belong.
Yeah, and then from there we go to the dig site with Grant and Ellie.
Does that come before the Nedry scene?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think we see Nedry until after that scene.
Huh.
He said, so here's what happens. He, we're there. They're like, muchachos, blah, 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 blah. Right.
Right. Right.
And he's like, you'll never get Grant out of Montana. And he goes, why won't we do that? And then he goes, muchachos, blah, 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 and he's picked up a piece of amber.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Because he's a like digger. Me. He's a digger.
Yeah.
And then we transition to Grant.
To Grant. Yeah, you're right.
And they're unearthing a raptor.
Yeah.
I never knew what that guy was saying until much later. To me, it was because grunts like me. And I was like, what's
referring to grunts like him. Yeah, yeah.
And then you have the amazing scene. I guess I shouldn't just like recount the whole movie. But you have that great scene between the kid.
Suffice it to say that the introductions in this movie are like typical Spielberg. I mean, he really outlines everything pretty well with all of these characters.
He tells you, through actions, he tells you what each of these characters is about and what's important to them and what isn't. You know, when Grant is introduced, he's a Luddite. He's interested in and passionate about paleontology, right? And and things that are old and in the ground and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Ellie is interested in sort of life and curiosity and things like that. And then
Grant's out to prove something too.
Yeah.
Like he has a very an unpopular belief that he's out to prove, which I think is important later for sort of legitimizing, you know, why he's willing maybe to go along with what's happening and not just be like, you idiots, you know, and turn around and leave.
Yeah. We also see that immediately that he's bad with kids and he's bad with computers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Technology.
Right.
And the first time we see Hammond, there's a complete disregard for science. So he helicopters into a dig site.
Yeah, they're blowing the tarps and everything all over the
place. It could potentially destroy, the bones and stuff like that. He could care less. He's also intrusive. He goes into their little, office and just roots around and what have you.
Yeah.
And he does this because he's funding, you know, their dig. But he feels that entitles him to sort of do what he wants. So, like, great setup, right? Of all these characters, you from the get-go, you know what they're all about.
Yeah. He's so careless and
reckless.
In every regard, you know, like he's very dedicated to his vision
and his
without paying any attention to any potential. He gives like no credence to any criticisms whatsoever or any questions.
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't want to bring any of these scientists to his park, but the board wanted them to sign off on it.
Yeah.
This was not even his idea.
Yeah.
And he believes, and it's clear from the start, that as long as you throw enough money at something, it'll be good enough. Like he funds their, he said the way he convinces Ellie and Grant to go is he funds their dig for the next 12 months or something, right? The way that, like, all throughout the movie, his catchphrase is, we spared no expense, right? We've got, you know, this setup and these people and all this. And, like, basically, if I put enough money into this, everything's going to be fine.
Yeah.
The moment that got me as a kid, you know, like, the first scene scares the life out of me, and then I'm all messed up for the scene following it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I enjoy the
Grant scene.
Yeah. As it goes. But the scene that got me, and it's probably the scene that got a lot of people, is the Brachiosaurus.
Hmm.
When he first, you know, it's when they first see the dinosaurs.
You weren't hooked when he like pretends to gut the kid with the
that was
with
good
the raptor claw, because that's what got me.
Yeah. And that
I was like,
man, that doesn't look very scary. But yeah, once that Brachiosaurus showed up, I was like, oh my God, that's a dinosaur. You know, and it's funny, like the movie itself is, not only is it a great movie, but it's a moment in, it is a, a watershed moment.
Yes, yes. In that film scene history? In particular. Yeah. That's, and one of the reasons why that scene works so well is because it is that watershed
you
moment.
You haven't, yeah, that's the first reveal.
Yeah. You are in Grant's exactly. mind, just like the audience is in.
You've been waiting to see dinosaurs,
yes.
right?
Yeah.
The whole time.
You're like, what am I here for? Yeah. What are you going to show me, Spielberg? And yeah. he's like, what are you going to show me, Hammond? Yeah. And then you have that moment at the same time. But it's also, like, culturally, like, this is the era of computer graphics, yeah. credible computer graphics yeah. becoming yeah.
And I wonder,
relevant.
You know, that the as they were making the movie, the initial idea was to do everything practically and to have a few scenes here and there when needed of computer generated effects. But that the majority of stuff would be through puppetry from Stan Winston mm-hmm. and stop motion mm-hmm. with
Phil Tippett.
Yeah. And as they're making the movie, the guys at ILM, I think it was ILM.
Yeah.
Are like, you know, I think we could actually do full size, you know, full in frame dinosaurs interacting with the actors. And so Spielberg was like, well, do a screen test. Like, give me... work something up, show me what you guys can do mm-hmm. and I'll assess from there, you know, and they put together this thing of the T-Rex just walking across frame. And of course, you know, Spielberg's like blown away. And so then they're like, he's like, okay, well, we're going to use this a lot more than we intended. and Phil Tippett, you know, he kind of, sadly was sort of, Not pushed out of production because he was retained.
Yeah, he was still used for some
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, and they were actually used kind of as puppeteers and trainers for the computer graphics guys to say this is how puppetry works or mm-hmm. this is how... Because it was kind of the same idea, you know. They even built these rigs that were like robotic... or not robotic, but they were like...
armatures,
yeah, stop motion puppets that had computer sensors in them and stuff, so they could move them and it would be reproduced,
track their motions, yeah.
And so that they kind of used them in that way. That Phil Tippett and his crew, I think. But I wonder. I always wonder, you know, if he made Jurassic Park now, Spielberg,
mm-hmm.
would he have the same measured hand with those computer generated dinosaurs?
Would it be
had.
A balance of the different styles?
Because yeah. what makes that movie, I think, stand up to, you know, 20 years later mm-hmm. is that it's not all computer. It's sort of computer graphics when they're needed.
Yeah.
When you can't accomplish it through puppetry, they're doing the computer graphics. And I think that's why that movie doesn't... I mean, you can still... It still looks like it was made in 93,
mm-hmm.
but it's not... It's still pretty great. The scene to me that has yet to fall apart, mm-hmm. Effects wise, is the T-Rex attack.
Yeah.
Like that still to me looks amazing.
Yeah.
And that's the second sort of whammy of that movie, right?
When you finally get to the T-Rex.
Like you have the Brachiosaurus and you're like, oh, wow. Yeah. You know, there it is, full in the frame, at, you know, enormous Brachiosaurus. And everything in that scene works. Like, the reveal works, the way that they animate that dinosaur works, where, you know, jumps up or sort of gets up on its hind legs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, to
and
grab
then
the
lands
food.
And you get that boom. Right.
Yeah.
The score sort of swells at that moment, and then they pan over and reveal a whole herd of dinosaurs at that lake, right? Mm-hmm. Like everything about that reveal is amazing. And then I think the next dinosaur you see is the Triceratops, right?
Yes.
Which is on its
we see side. The hatching.
Oh, right. The Velociraptor.
Yes. Yeah. The hatching.
And that's pretty cool, too. That little baby raptor.
Yeah.
You've bred raptors.
The lab. Yeah.
And then they feed the raptor.
Oh, yeah. Right?
But I think the scene where you're, where again, you're just, you can't believe what you're seeing is that T-Rex attack. Like, and the T-Rex overall, through that whole movie, every time the T-Rex shows up, it's like the best thing ever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, all you want to do is cheer.
Yeah.
He is.
You are Calvin in that moment. Yeah.
But I don't know about you, but I, in any scene that he's in, I'm rooting for the T-Rex. You know, like he breaks through everything about it is so awesome. The roar he has.
He's so majestic.
Yes.
That's what I think is.
He's not. Yeah. And what's cool, and I think they even talk about this, is they never treated any of the dinosaurs as monsters.
Yeah.
They're animals, you know.
Yeah.
And they treated them like the representation of them is as animals.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like the king lion on the safari. Totally.
But he breaks through that, you know, fence and he lets out a roar and you're just like, I cannot believe this. What am I seeing? You know? And then he attacks that whole scene is so incredible.
Feel like that. I want to bounce back in a minute, but while we're talking about that scene, like I always get cold thinking about that scene.
Oh.
And I remember seeing it, and I'm sure a lot of it was just like, you know, it was summer, the air conditioning was jacked up in the theater, but every time I saw that movie, I remember being in that scene and like it's raining and it's, you know, it's and I remember muddy. Just freezing in that scene.
Oh, wow.
And I still think about it now and it makes me cold thinking about that. But you're right. Like the T-Rex by itself is awesome. But I think everything about that scene is so great. Putting the kids in peril.
Yeah. It's funny too because like, the movie itself is kind of full of flaws. Like there are lots of plot holes.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of illogical things that happen.
Mm-hmm.
But at no time do I care. Like, I am enjoying it so much. Like and one thing that's pointed out about the T-Rex scene is, you know, the T-Rex, his paddock, he walks through from his side to where the trucks are, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then later, at the end of that scene, he knocks one of the trucks over into a ravine.
Right, that huge cliff.
And you're like, where's this cliff?
Can he climb trees?
Yeah. And I sent it to you before. There's somebody sort of put together a little schematic of how that could work. I'm not just going to walk through the whole movie.
But I think this is good. Like this is giving us touch points, you know, talking about the movie.
Yeah, I want to go back to another illogical part of the movie, but it's a fantastic one. Is earlier before all the T-Rex stuff, when Hammond is still sort of leading them on the tour, he takes them into the little theater, right?
Yes,
the moving theater.
Yes,
it's a ride.
Yes.
And like they get in, and
it's a tram tour.
There's a little crossbar that goes down over them, right?
Yeah.
And again, later, like this, like it shows Grant fighting technology, like he's trying to push.
Oh yeah, he will
up.
Not be suppressed by. But neither will the dinosaurs. Yeah. Grant is a dinosaur
exactly.
in that scene.
He is a dinosaur. Yeah.
Yes.
As we said earlier. But they have that thing where John Hammond gets up in the front of the theater, and
hello,
John Hammond appears.
Hello, John.
And someone pointed this out. I remember reading this somewhere. Like, did John Hammond plan on doing this every day for multiple tours?
Like he's always going to be there
right.
for the thing. You know, I mean, my assumption is that he prepared this
that
little introduction just for this group.
Right.
But
Mr. DNA has to be.
Oh, he's yes. Every group gets to see Mr. DNA.
I love that. Yeah. I love when he's like, well, for that, we'll need some of your blood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Ow.
He pricks his. Yeah. That hurt, John.
That scene is spectacular.
Yeah.
And I know people, a lot of people have sort of knocked the movie because of that scene, because like they condense, Spielberg basically takes like 150 pages of book,
yeah,
which is like explanations scene. And, you know, going through all the formulas and stuff. And he condenses it to this like 3 minute animation of this made up cartoon character.
But that's all you need.
Right. Yeah. Well, and plus, I think that that further sells the idea that Hammond is looking at this as like this is a money making theme park enterprise. You know,
he's disregarding the, as Malcolm says later, the years and years and years of science and nature and all that stuff, right? That have preceded what they're doing, right? Mm-hmm. That all these accomplishments have been made, and Hammond is simply procuring them and then exploiting them, right? And he reduces it down to a cartoon, you know, to this silly mascot, Mr. DNA, who then goes on to explain how the whole process works.
Yeah.
It's a great cartoon. Dino DNA.
So we can't really talk about that whole laboratory thing without mentioning Dennis Nedry, who
is... Well, he's
is,
not in the lab, though.
Isn't he? Oh, no, he's like the security systems guy, right?
He's a computer guy.
He does go into the lab.
He built their whole system.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He devised their whole system. And I'm trying to remember what Sam Jackson's character, like what his role... I assume that he and Nedry were kind of essentially... colleagues or you know, the same kind of job, right?
Yeah,
both computer people.
Yeah.
But I can't remember if there's a distinction between the two.
It seems like they were independent. They worked independently of each other, which is another like there's no failsafe there.
Yeah,
you know, like the idea that you would have this huge investment, billions and billions of dollars, and only one person knows how to, you know, run everything.
Well, what's great is like Dennis Nedry is the one point at which Hammond did spare expense. Because he even says it. He's like, do you know how many programmers would, you know, blah, blah, blah. He like lists this whole thing, you know, has this whole list of things he's done. And he says, for the amount that I bid for this job, because I'd like to see you find one.
Yeah.
And like, so it's made clear that while he may have spared every expense in all other aspects of the park, he did not spare expense. Or he did spare expense.
He did.
On the guy who's
He spared some expense.
Right. On the guy who's integral in making sure the park systems run smoothly.
Which then results in him hatching that plot to smuggle the embryos out, which then basically sets everything into chaos.
Exactly.
So it's Hammond's fault. Everything is Hammond's fault,
basically. Yeah, essentially, you know, not only because he's tampering with nature,
right,
but also because he didn't pay his workers what they should have been paid. Or Nedry's greedy. We don't know.
Well, it's a combination of both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nedry, yeah, he has that scene, right, that you talked about earlier.
When he's at the table,
You know, and I always thought the food looked really good.
I think that's the idea.
But you know what confused me about that scene is Dodson pulls out the Barbasol can.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, here's how you'll contain them. And he goes, it looks just like a can or whatever. He unscrews the bottom. Like, Nedry's delighted.
Yes, yeah, he's like clapping his hands.
And when he opens it up, like when he pulls the little thing out,
the chamber,
there's this squeak. And I could never tell if it was Nedry squeaking with delight or if there was some sort of release.
Like a compression.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe both. And Nedry then, is that compressor.
And then he sprays.
He's foam out. Yeah.
And then he puts it on that pie. And I was always like, wait, is it shaving cream or is it
whipped cream?
Whipped cream.
It's shaving cream. Are you still wondering about that?
Isn't it? Dodson, we got Dodson here. He takes Dodson's hat off.
Oh yeah, he does.
Which I feel like, you know, he assumes that he's wearing that to be have a disguise, but Dodson was balding, and so I thought, well, maybe he's insecure about that, and that hat's kind of his. Makes him feel a bit better about himself.
But that makes Nedry even more despicable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. His scene with the Dilophosaur is also awesome. Did that scare you?
Yes.
Yeah. That was a pretty scary scene.
You know, it's funny, a lot of that movie, but once I was in, the fact that I was scared didn't bother me anymore. Mm. You know?
Like you didn't want to leave.
There was so much credit built up from all the awesomeness, you know? Mm. That it was all awesome.
You're like, I can live with a few. Fine, I'll do I can thing. Live with a few moments that will stick with me for the rest of my life.
He's what's that guy's name? I can't even think of it right now. The guy who plays Ned.
Wayne Knight.
Wayne Knight is really great in that movie overall, because I like when he faces off against that Dilophosaur, it's just like he himself is funny during that whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
And the way he kind of disregards that Dilophosaur. Like, and it's another instance where, like, Spielberg's just making crap up about dinosaurs. You know, but nobody cares.
Right.
But, like, there's no frills and there's no spitting of acid.
But that spitting is awesome.
Yeah, it is.
Spitting is great. And you know, as soon as you find out about that, as soon as you like hear that, you know that eventually somebody is going to run into that thing
and
it's going to spit.
And the cool thing is you hear about it on the tour. Right. When the other people are on the tour and it's where they're all like, where are we ever going to see any dinosaurs? You know?
Yeah.
You do.
Which is another great device,
you
too.
You plan on having dinosaurs
on your dinosaur too? Tour?
Hello.
Bum, bum, bum.
Hello. Yeah.
But that brings up a point, though. Like they're constantly not fulfilled, you know.
Yeah.
The moment of reveal is prolonged
before
you finally get to the T-Rex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's cool that the Dilophosaur is cute initially and then terrifying, mm-hmm. you know.
He makes that noise.
Yeah.
Well, I meant the other noise. The cute noise. Boop. Yeah.
I can't even make it.
It sounds like the Predator. Maybe that was a clue. Maybe we were supposed to take a clue from that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, look at this cute thing. But he sounds like the Predator.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that car shakes.
Yeah. That's Nedry. Yeah, the Jeep.
Yeah.
That's another thing is the sound design of that movie is so good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the T-Rex roar is just one of the best things I've ever heard. You know, it's so, you put it best. It's even the roar is majestic.
Yeah.
Like it's like a clarion call, you know, it's this like resounding call to, I don't know what.
It's like the primal world.
Yeah.
Primal Scream. Oh, Primal
so
Scream.
Cool.
Oh, we can put
so
Motley Crue
good.
In here as an interlude. Yeah. The sound, that two things on that. So a couple weeks after Jurassic Park came out, mm-hmm. I went to go see Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
And I'm in the middle of Rookie
it's
of the
a
Year.
Good movie.
And I can hear next door.
Oh. Nice.
So I got up and went to the next
Did
theater
you?
Next door and I watched
oh,
the end
wow.
of Jurassic Park. Yeah. But that was the first movie that had DTS, wasn't it?
Was it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. That was sort of like the unsung thing. It was
nice.
Like, oh, look at all these computer effects.
But
that was
what?
That was the first movie that had like fully digital sound, as I recall.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's excellent.
I'm pretty sure. That I remember seeing that logo for the first time.
Very nice. Very nice. But every dinosaur's call was pretty incredible. You had the T-Rex roar, then you had the raptors. Who had several vocalizations. They had the screech, you know, the kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they also had like this low rumble, this kind of cat growl.
Yeah,
to them.
Did they, was that Ben Burt? Did he do the sound for that?
Oh, I don't know.
Another Star Wars
alumnus? So.
No? Okay.
Maybe. I could be wrong. I know that a guy whose name I believe is John Farmer worked on and he didn't work on it. All I know is there's a guy who worked on that Jurassic Park and Lord of the Rings. because I recognize him.
One
from,
guy.
I recognize him from both behind the scenes features. I was like, hey, it's the dude from Jurassic Park.
I want to know if the little person in Jabba's tail ever did anything else. Did he work in Lord of the Rings?
He was a T-Rex tail. he worked exclusively in tails from that point on. Backwards and forwards.
Backwards and forwards. Backwards and forwards.
You had the Dilophosaur, like we talked about, had that weird chirp.
Yeah, yeah.
That guttural kind of chirp, and then it had the scream, the sort of scraping scream with the rattling frills. The Brachiosaur kind of trumpet, you know? Mm-hmm. It felt very real. Like,
yeah, very grounded in the animal world.
Yeah. Should talk about Ian Malcolm.
Dr. Ian Malcolm.
The rock star of the film, if you will.
Yeah.
I bring scientists, you bring a rock star.
Yeah.
Is the line as he's introduced, right?
And Disneyland's opening day, nothing worked. Yes, Sean, but when the Pirates of the Caribbean breaks down, the pirates don't eat the tourists.
I feel like that is Jeff Goldblum at his Goldblumist.
Yes, a new pinnacle in Goldblumy.
Yeah.
Goldblumity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He Goldblumed in that movie. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
It's amazing. Like, I still, even as a kid, I would watch his scenes and I was like, man, this guy's so, like, interesting to watch just talk.
Yeah.
Like,
I
was fascinated when he's talking about chaos theory, you know, which I'm sure is all wrong. Like, I'm sure,
right.
Like, real chaos theory is not like what he describes.
Chaosticians are, yeah, like, just throwing their hands up as they watch this movie.
But he's like, you know, explaining it to Ellie, and he's like, you know, got her hand, and he's dropping water onto it, and he's, like, tugging on her hair while he does. Like, he's so tactile and weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, who is this guy? Like, what's he? He's so strange, but compelling.
He, in a weird way, he's kind of like the audience.
The proxy?
Yeah. Because, you know, he has that balance of being, he appreciates the spectacle,
yeah.
You know? He's like, wow, this is incredible. How did you do this? But on the other side, he's like, are you out of your mind? This is horrifying.
Yeah.
You know, and he basically, he's the first one, I think, to kind of say, like, well, you're kind of doomed.
Yeah.
You know, one way or another, this is not going to work out.
Like the audience, he knows this will go wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He has all the good catchphrase.
Yeah, he's comic relief.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And he puts the Mac on Ellie, really.
Man, like, doesn't he?
God, he's so,
well,
so
then
smooth.
Later, while they're trapped, you know, the power's gone out and they're sitting next to the T-Rex cage. He and Grant are in a car together.
Yes.
He's like, so you and Dr. Sattler, are you?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, waste no time.
Yeah, so
checking
great.
Checking in on that.
Oh, he has a pretty valiant moment in that scene too. Like, as misguided as it was, you know, Grant gets out there and he has the flare and he's trying to, you know, misdirect the T-Rex away from the kids, right? Mm-hmm. He sort of like waves it twice and then tosses it into the jungle.
Right.
It looks like T-Rex is about to go.
Yeah, go after away. It.
And then you hear, hey, hey, it's Malcolm. He's got one too. And he's like, Malcolm, freeze. But then he's like, you get the kids. And he runs. And like that's sort of the T-Rex gives chase. You
yeah.
know?
So the effect is the same. Like he distracts the Tyrannosaurus.
Yeah.
But he does it in to his own detriment.
And the T-Rex comes back. Yes. To mess with the kids and Grant, you know. It's another thing that was made up that the T-Rex couldn't see if you stayed still. There's no way to know.
Right. We've never been inside a T-Rex's pupils.
Right.
We can't tell if
but it's
if his
cool
cones
thing.
And rods work.
It's a great
the
device,
way ours
though.
Do. Yeah.
It's a great device, though. I mean, it makes that scene so incredible that they have to stay still.
It adds extra
right
tension.
There.
Yeah.
Know? All you want to do is run away.
When his head pounds through that ceiling.
Which ceiling?
The ceiling of the car.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When they've got the light or whatever, and you know, and then they're like, no, freeze. And
from what I understand, the kids were not expecting that. So the screams are real.
That's excellent.
Yeah. Oh, they got that awesome headgear that Tim wears.
Oh, yeah, those glasses, the goggles. Yeah,
those are great.
Those Jeeps were pretty rad, too.
Man.
It was great to watch them get destroyed, but like at the same time they
were explorers. Those cars.
Oh, okay.
There are Jeeps though. The Wranglers.
Yes, and they come back in the Jeep later on and when they get chased, that T-Rex chase with
Must
the
go faster.
Objects in the mirror
Must
may appear closer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which that must go faster line he also used in Independence Day.
Oh, yes he does. You're right.
It almost became His
catchphrase.
Yeah.
Must go faster. Muldoon is pretty good. I feel like he's not given enough to do.
Yeah.
He has that one great scene.
With the raptors?
Yeah.
Clever girl.
Yeah. He's an unfortunate
instead
sacrifice,
of...
as is Samuel Jackson.
Yeah, agreed. I think instead of... congratulating the Velociraptor on tricking him, he should have turned right at that moment and shot the Velociraptor with his gun.
The one to the right? Yeah.
Yeah, like he takes a moment. Both the raptor and him take a moment.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, like they're appreciating each other. It was like, you know, it was two hunters sort of like...
And the raptor's like, I gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, you got me.
Like, you could picture the raptor like coming through the brush. You know, he's like, I gotcha, right?
he's like gesturing to himself.
And then,
like, who's the winner here, huh, buddy?
And Muldoon's like, clever girl.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. He like opens his shirt.
Yeah, come
and
on.
He's like, come on, yeah, eviscerate me.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You've earned this. I love that. You know, in that scene, what's great is he's sort of lining up this shot right to take on the raptor that he can see. And then the other raptor kind of comedically almost appears out of the brush next to him. He's like,
it's just that eyeball. Yeah.
Yeah. And he does that weird, like, throat thing, that, you know? And he's a clever girl. And then he attacks. It cuts to the other raptor that was, you know, in Muldoon's sights.
Mm-hmm.
And you just see his eye. And, like, you yourself imagine that the raptor is, like, thinking, yes, excellent, you know? As a snake, like, slithers across a branch in front of the eye of the raptor.
Yeah.
I never understood the significance of that snake.
I always thought it was supposed to mean like that's how one that it's like these things are so insidious, you know. But it's also like this thing is so cold, you know, like he's colder than
a snake.
Yeah.
Colder than a snake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
Maybe. We need Spielberg to talk to us about
it.
He never does audio commentaries for his movies. This is the thing.
Never.
He's never done one as far as I know.
So there's no...
So we don't know. We don't know what's going through.
But he has talked about making that movie.
Yeah, but down to that specific scene, I don't know.
There's a lot of great behind-the-scenes material for Jurassic Park. There are videos of the discussions that Spielberg had with Stan Winston and Phil Tippett and Dennis Muren.
Like pre-production kind of stuff.
Yeah, like before they ever made, you know, the movie, just talking about like different scenes and like what they could do It's literally in Spielberg's dining room.
Oh,
have
awesome.
You seen this?
No.
It's like VHS recordings. And it's pretty great. And like, I don't know why I found this exciting, but Spielberg's like cursing through the whole thing. He's like, shit, fuck, this, that.
Interesting.
You know? And I was just like, wow, that's... I didn't
He's
know.
Like Rick McCallum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Foul mouth Rick McCallum.
Yeah. Oh, man. The best scene, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, I should... Man, it's hard to say what's best. I was going to say the best scene is the last scene, but I'll also say that the kitchen scene mm-hmm. with the Velociraptors is pretty incredible.
I think that whole sequence.
Yeah.
The point at which they get back, the core group gets yeah. back to the visitor center.
Yeah.
And from there to the very end.
Yeah.
This is, and it's keeping with Spielberg. We talked about this before. Like the last like 15 minutes of his movies are all very like super dramatic. There's almost no dialogue exchanged.
Right.
It's all, this is basically all chase.
Yeah.
And that whole kitchen scene is handled so well. The part with the ceiling,
there's
are literally like, you're like pulling your legs up in
yeah,
your chair.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because Lex is hanging out
yes.
from the ceiling.
Oh, that shot is incredible.
Yeah, such a brilliant.
She falls through and she's dangling there. The raptor is like struggling to get up. And you're like, oh my God,
yeah.
get up.
Yeah.
To her.
Yeah, yeah.
And then everything is so amazing in that one moment. Like, and what I think is great is there's so many different types of like action and
mm-hmm.
Sort of tension in those in that sequence, that final sequence. There's the kitchen scene where it's all about staying hidden, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the scene where they get into the computer room and it's all about sort of beating the clock. Lex has to get the systems back online before the raptors can push their way in, right?
Yeah.
And then
the realization that they're smart to
open
the doors.
And then that's all for naught because then the raptors just break through the glass, right? And yeah, they crawl through the ceiling and Lex falls through and it's terrifying. And then they make their way out into that big open atrium.
And then then they're exposed.
Yeah, they're totally exposed and they have to climb off onto the dinosaur bones and the raptors are jumping on it. And like the whole thing falls down, and then Tim is almost impaled by the ribs of one of them, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then like they get up, and the raptor's on one side of them, and they like go
then
to run away.
Surrounded.
There's another one. And you're like, oh my God, what are they gonna do? And then the one like raptor crouches down, and he's like,
about
I'm gonna
to pounce.
I'm gonna get you.
I'm gonna be
and
the
then,
one that eats you.
Bam! T-Rex head just bites down on that raptor, picks him up. And it's like killing them. And the other raptor jumps up onto the T-Rex and he's biting at him. They run away. And the T-Rex is like, you gotta get off of me, you jerk. And he reaches back and he gets him in his mouth and he flings him into the
T-Rex skeleton.
Into his own skeleton.
Yeah.
And then that banner floats
down. When dinosaurs ruled the earth.
And he goes, wah! Oh, it's so amazing.
So cathartic and such a celebration.
God, it is. They win. The dinosaurs win right there.
Yeah.
That's what's so beautiful about that movie is like the threat the whole time are the dinosaurs, right? At least that's what's threatening the humans.
Ostensibly, that's the threat, right? Yeah.
And they win in the end. The dinosaurs, they get the humans off.
They conquer the island.
Yeah. And it's such a beautiful moment when he... Like, not only do we beat the bad guy dinosaurs, which are the Velociraptors, right?
Right, right.
The T-Rex gets this amazing moment. And that scene wasn't in the original script.
It's not in the book.
The movie was supposed to end with the raptors. The T-Rex was going to be gone from the point, I think the last time you see him was with the Gallimimus.
Okay.
Where he kind of takes one of them out, which is
also
a great moment.
In that chase sequence, across the field. Yeah.
Anytime he shows up, you're like, yes!
But instant gold star.
That was going to be it. And then I guess it was Spielberg who was like, we need the T-Rex to come back.
Yeah.
Like, we can't, we've got to
So how were they going to end that? How were they going to escape
I can't
from
remember
that?
Now. I I should try to, maybe we'll have to look it up, but I can't remember. Let me see if I can find it. The original ending was going to be Grant using a platform machine to maneuver a raptor into a fossil Tyrannosaur's jaws. So originally he was going to essentially use the jaws of that Tyrannosaur skeleton to kill a raptor.
To kill a raptor.
And then Spielberg was like, that's dumb. We should actually just bring the T-Rex back.
Mm-hmm.
Which, thank goodness, because what an amazing scene.
Yeah, now it does beg the question of like,
how did he sneak in?
His presence go unnoticed until that moment?
It's, you know,
how does this thing the size of, you know, like a three-story building.
No one notices it. Like there's no like.
Like he just like quietly opens the visitor center doors.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, like, again, I'm just like, I don't really care how he gets in secretly.
Yeah.
Like, it's so worth it.
Because you're in the moment. Yeah, the payoff, it totally makes up for.
Absolutely worth the complete implausibility of it.
Yeah.
There's no way it would have gotten in there sneakily, but who cares? Because, like, that moment is so amazing.
Yeah.
Right? There's a... we were talking about helicopters, and there's a nice little kind of Easter egg moment in the first helicopter ride that I didn't even notice. I never knew about this until like maybe a year ago when I read about it online. As you know, later in the film, they learn that all the dinosaurs were supposedly female, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then some of them changed gender.
Right.
In order to breed.
Like those frogs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's that moment in the helicopter when Grant is trying to put his seatbelt on, and he has two female ends, in quotes, of seatbelts.
Oh, yeah.
And he can't get them to work.
Yes.
So he ties them together.
Ties them. He finds a way.
He finds a way. How cool is that?
That's great.
I never noticed that.
Me either. I was always confused by that scene because it seems like it happens in a cut. It seems like one minute he's got these two ends and the next minute they're tied together. Like
right.
I totally miss him tying them together. It happens so quickly. That's what I always got hung up on. But yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I had not thought about that.
Yeah. It's foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Now I was always a little disappointed that we don't get a glimpse of the dinosaurs from the air, from the air when they're escaping. I want to see like fields of the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
You know, sort of like now this
one
is their terrain.
Reflection.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I remember being surprised there wasn't that shot. I remember I almost expected to see like a pterodactyl.
Yeah.
Alongside them or something.
Yeah.
Which I don't think would have been good.
No.
But I do think there should have been that final shot of the dinosaurs on the island.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you there.
It's the one miss in that
otherwise
pretty perfect assembly of scenes that we call movies.
It's like a movie that has got plenty of flaws narratively, right?
Sure.
The performances aren't like Academy Award.
No. And the characters are fairly one-dimensional.
But everything works so well together.
Yeah.
And there's such... It's like... I think it sort of speaks to this really cliche, but it really speaks to the kid in you, you know, like the wonder. I think not only is it like, oh man, dinosaurs, right? How cool is this? But it really reminds you how wonderful movies are.
Yeah.
The things that movies can accomplish and make you feel, you know, the joy, I think, that you can feel watching a movie, the magic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't often see movie, and especially now when I feel like everyone is very, you know, desensitized to movie magic, right? Mm-hmm. Like now it's expected. Things should look as stunning and climactic and, you know, amazing. Like with the bar keeps getting pushed higher and higher and we have to have bigger effects every time.
And we're broadly, we are more savvy to the production now thanks to it behind the scenes stuff.
It's harder to for a movie to feel magical.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the core of it. And like Jurassic Park felt like something really special.
And still does, I think.
Yeah.
Still holds up. And it, too, it was universal, no pun intended,
hey.
That they the emotions that it elicits,
yeah.
you know, are basically, they you get the same response from everybody.
I think so, yeah.
It's a lot like Jaws in that regard, I think, that it draws the same emotional response
yeah.
from everybody who sees it.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park does for dinosaur theme parks what Jaws did for the ocean.
Ooh, I like it.
I'm terrified of dinosaur theme
too.
Parks now.
I don't want to go.
Yeah.
But I do. the score, which we alluded to earlier, is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. One of Johnny's best.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've heard it performed live.
Mm-hmm.
And I was almost in tears. Like, really, honestly, not to sound overdramatic, but I got choked up when they played the Jurassic Park theme. And it was a John Williams symphony. Like, they did a bunch of John Williams' work. And when they did that, like, that from the moment it started, I was like, oh, my gosh, I might lose it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it elicits such... just elicits a lot of feeling in me because it was such a formative thing. So when the movie came out in 93, you know, I'm 12 years old, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't have any money of my own. I have no means of conveyance beyond my parents, right? And I managed to see this movie 9 times.
Wow. That's impressive. That breaks my record.
What's your record?
My record was 8 with Scream.
Eight Scream?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd like to Scream.
Oh, we'll have to do a retro spectacle.
We'll get on Scream. Yeah.
That's a, what, a couple of years?
Yeah, to 2016, right? I guess. Yeah.
I saw it. You know, I first saw it with both my parents. Right, we all went as a family. I then saw it subsequently with each one, my mom and my dad on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw it 2 more times after that with them, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think I saw it at 2 or 3 different birthday parties.
Wow.
I probably saw it with 2 or 3 different friends. Like, any opportunity, and I think I even, like, manipulated situations into me getting to see them. Like, I'm sure at these birthday parties, like, you know what we should do at your birthday party is see Jurassic Park.
You should go
Park.
See Jurassic Park, yeah. Yeah. I hope I can make it.
Like, every opportunity that I saw, I jumped on it.
Uh-huh.
And it became an obsession of mine, that movie. Like, I asked for anything that had anything to do with it, and specifically around the making of it. Like, I, up to that point, you know, I definitely knew that I had an interest in, like, how these movies were made.
Mm-hmm.
But with Jurassic Park, like, I needed to know how they did it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so, like we talked before, they released that, like, it's like
that VHS.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes tape.
Behind the scenes that, to me, was like, it was like finding treasure.
Yeah.
You know, and I watched that once we had both that and the movie. You know, I probably watched that more than the movie. I just really was fascinated by how they made all this stuff. I had a book that was the making of that I, you know, read cover to cover and had storyboards in the back of it. I think I still have the book. At the time, I was subscribed to Disney Adventures magazine.
Oh, yeah.
And they did a whole thing about Jurassic Park. I'd read that issue over and over. I had a crush on Ariana Richards, who played Lex. I was like, just anything and everything.
You were the Jurassic
And like
kid.
I said, I wanted to be paleontologist. And I legit, like, not just like, oh, dinosaurs are cool. Like, I bought dinosaur books, like educational books, or was given. I keep saying I bought.
Textbooks.
I didn't buy any of this stuff. Like, I had no money.
You're also like, yeah, but you're like collecting the kids' yeah. birthday money.
Yeah.
You're like, you know what else would be great is if you gave me your birthday money.
I think there's something really cool that I could get that we could share. But I had books about dinosaurs, and I learned a lot about, like, so when Jurassic Park 2 came out, I was like on the hunt for different dinosaurs I knew about that I wanted to see realized, and they fulfilled quite a few.
You had a checklist?
Yeah, yeah. Like the Pachycephalosaurus, which is one of the coolest dinosaurs.
Pachycephalosaurus.
It's the headbutt dinosaur.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's got the dome head.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was completely enamored with everything about that movie, and it became that translated into a desire to know about all movies and how they're made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from that point forward, I was more interested a lot of times in how a movie was made than the movie itself. And it continues to this day. Like, we talked about it before, how I really love watching documentaries about the making of movies and the commentaries on movies. It's just, and it's Jurassic Park is the reason for that.
That's it for this episode, but join us back on the island next episode for part 2 and more Jurassic Park.